Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to head inside the film room and break down the tape. The FantasyGuru.com weekly matchup podcast is on. Here's John Hansen and Greg Cosell.
The Week 6 matchup podcast here on FantasyGuru.com, and I'm John Hansen. We're going to break down week number 6 with our man Greg Cosell in a moment. We always want to remind you at the top of the broadcast, podcast, whatever you want to call it, that you need to go to FantasyGuru.com, check it out, and subscribe. Discounted subscription price for the rest of the season. And our DFS Guru Excel tool is doing very well and winning people money. Also, I want to let you know that this podcast in particular is brought to you. We have a sponsor by Sports Manias, your free fantasy news app. It's fantasy season. Are you ready to dominate your league? Download the free Sports Manias app. You can simply import your fantasy team from Yahoo, CBS Sports, and ESPN and get personalized feeds from fantasy football experts. Get breaking news, scoring opportunities, fantasy points, and milestones with Sports Manias. You also get real-time updates on your players to make smarter lineup decisions. Alerts every time your players are in the red zone. Sports Manias brings you a new fantasy tool that gives you an edge to help you dominate your league. Get your fantasy on with Sports Manias. Week number 6 is coming at us this evening, and we've got our man Greg Cosell on the line. Greg, good morning.
Mr. Hansen, what's happening, my friend?
Week 6, rolling along here, and it's a process every week. It's, it goes quickly. It's like, wow, I got to review what happened last week, but move onward and upward, and that's what we're going to do. So let's get to it. The Atlanta Falcons at the New Orleans Saints. Greg, I know you broke down the Saints tape. Let's first talk about how serious are the protection issues up front for New Orleans, because you're watching the tape, and any deficiencies that you see here with them throwing the football, not really Drew Brees, right? You think Brees is fine, but man, they have some protection issues, Greg.
They do. But, you know, it's funny. They did throw for a lot of yards against the Eagles, a team that pressures and plays a lot of man. And I thought that Brees threw the ball really well. I thought their receivers did a good job against man. They're playing an Atlanta team tonight, John, that is not a high percentage blitz team. They're predictable coverage-wise. I don't mean that in a negative way. I'm just saying that tactically they don't necessarily do a lot of things. They're a foundational cover three. So if they can protect, I think they're going to be able to throw the ball.
Yeah, and Atlanta does give up a lot of catches to running backs. So that's something to watch here tonight. I think it'll be a big day catching the football for Mark Ingram, maybe even a little C.J. Spiller. And are you a little surprised that Spiller hasn't had a larger role? I know it's easier said than done working in a guy like Spiller, but this is Sean Payton. They did go out and get him. Not that they pounced on him in free agency, Greg, but I thought Spiller would be a little bit more involved.
Well, he is, John. The plays just haven't worked. And that's the great thing about watching the tape. They designed a couple of plays specifically for him against the Eagles, and the Eagles defense played them really well. In fact, they designed the exact same play that he scored the 80-yard touchdown on in overtime the week before, and Malcolm Jenkins did a terrific job in man coverage. But, you know, so they're trying to get him the ball. It's not as if they're ignoring him or avoiding him. It's just that the plays haven't worked.
Yeah, I guess when you look at the carries, it's a low number of carries, and you know the targets haven't been horrible. It's almost like designed kind of bigger plays, and right. I don't know, maybe and they're not working. Yeah, but I don't know, maybe try and running him a little bit. I mean, this is a guy, but didn't he have like 200 carries a couple of years ago with the Buffalo Bills? Yeah. So, anyways, let's see. Anything else here of note here? With this matchup. So you broke that down. Let's talk about the Saint defense, because this is not a great unit either, Greg, although there are some players in the secondary who you do like. There are a couple of players you don't like, and at least one, I know, watching the tape. What do you see out of the Saint secondary?
They're playing Delvin Bro, who's basically a free agent. He was actually a big-time recruit coming out of high school, had neck surgery, and he was off a lot of teams' boards because of that. I think he played in the Canadian League. I think he's shown well given where he's come from. I think he's been a solid player at corner. But, you know, I think this is a team overall, John. The issue with this defense is they're playing a lot of young players. It's hard to do a lot of things when you play a lot of young players. There are times that it appears they struggle to get lined up, which, again, is a function of who they're playing. So this is a defense that you can definitely move the ball on. They don't rush the quarterback particularly well. They're not necessarily stout against the run. At this point, it's a below-average NFL defense.
Yeah, and you saw maybe a couple of issues with the Falcon O-line. Last week, we've been praising them, but let's be honest, this is a line that a month ago we thought maybe one of the 5, 6, 7 worst in the league.
Right, right. No, I think they've overall played well. I thought this week was probably their worst game in pass protection, relatively speaking to their previous four. But, you know, Devontae Freeman, and this is where a back can help your O-line because the way he runs fits the scheme and helps the O-line. Because you wouldn't look at this O-line with all the success they've had running the ball, John, and say, wow, they're really athletic, which is the ideal kind of O-line you want in a zone run game. The Falcons' sure. O-line is not that group, but I think this is where Freeman's running style has helped it.
You think Jacob Tammy is maybe a factor tonight based on this matchup? I know you're not thrilled with the overall safety play. And do you look at Jacob Tammy as potentially a guy who could be a factor tonight? Obviously, Julio's a little bit banged up.
I think that's the key part here. I think Julio's ability to play meaningful snaps and his effectiveness playing those snaps impacts Tammy. And I think that if Julio can't be a factor or doesn't play, or who knows, I don't know at this point, then Tammy becomes a much larger factor. Yes.
Yeah. Eagle tight ends last week caught 8 balls for 104 and a touch against New Orleans. A couple of weeks ago, the Panthers and Greg Olsen got him big time for 10 grabs for 153 and 2 touchdowns. So we move on, Greg, and we take a look at, you know, Chicago at Detroit. NFC North battle. Obviously, these guys know each other well. We don't know about the Bears and Alshon Jeffrey and Eddie Royal yet again. This Lion D, though, they're hanging in there. They're not going to have Levy, but I know that you're fairly impressed with the Lion D. They're rotating in and out a lot of players. What do you see on tape lately with the Detroit defense?
I don't think their defense, believe it or not, I know people look at the score last week against Arizona, but you have to watch the game and the tape and see the flow of the game. There are a lot of very short drives by Arizona. I think that Lions defense has played well enough to keep them in games. I don't think this is a sieve defense. And I think Bears offense is very uneven right now. I mean, Cutler made some terrific throws, some terrific individual plays. I'm sure you saw the touchdown to Wilson last week, which was just as big time a throw as you can make in this league.
It was a fumbled Cutler snap, wasn't it?
No, not that touchdown.
Oh, okay.
The winning touchdown, I think, was.
Okay,
gotcha, I'm talking
gotcha.
About the first one to Wilson. But Cutler was uneven in that game. He missed some routine throws. They played Leno at left tackle, Grasu, the rookie from Oregon, at right at center. So they have some O-line issues. But, you know, this is not a consistent offense. I think it's more of a once-in-a-while play offense with Cutler, who I think overall last week played much more disciplined and under control. He just missed some throws that he needs to make.
Yeah, I don't know what else we can say about Detroit's offense. They're still struggling. They still have some
issues. I really don't know what to say about it. Yeah, I really don't know, John. I mean, it's a hard offense to figure out in terms of why they're – I mean, besides the obvious, we know they can't run the ball at all, and that's a big problem. But, I mean, that's the obvious, and we all know that.
Yeah, I think that, look, if they're going to have some success, they may have some here. I don't think that the matchup is particularly scary overall, though the Bear defense has been pretty solid there. My apologies for my stupid portable phone going off there, Greg. I don't know if you can hear that, but that's something I'm known for doing. I've got myriad phones, portable phones, hidden under, you know, under something.
Well, you're a high-level guy, John. You're a high-level guy. I'm just honored to be able to chat with you every week.
Oh, stop. No, I'm actually known for that. I'm serious. Serious XM. You know how many times I've had a phone go off while I'm on the air?
I feel like I'm keeping up with the Kardashians here.
This is a pop culture moment that you're involved in here right now. Let's get to Washington at the New York Jets, and looks like the Redskins might get DeSean Jackson back, but you know, we all know it's a difficult matchup, but exactly how challenging is this for the Redskins? I look at it and like I'm thinking, well, you know, we know Jay Gruden wants the run to be the foundation. They've lost their way a little bit running the football lately, and now you're up against the Jets, probably not going to be able to run
right.
it. And now you're looking at Kirk Cousins throwing to a decent receiving core, but no Jordan Reed again too, and that's a big one.
Yeah, I think that's critical. And I think Jackson, if he can go, is absolutely necessary for them, because otherwise they've got no vertical dimension to their pass game. They can't stretch. You know, at least Jackson, if he can't win and truly get open, at least he can lift and clear some coverage and create some opportunities for Cousins in the pass game. But they're going to have to pass protect, which is, I think, a little bit week to week with that team. And if they can't run the ball at all, and you know, that's relative, but if they can't run at all, then it's going to be a hard go for this offense, because, you know, Cousins, there's too many long yardage situations, and Cousins has a bad habit, and it's something that could always prevent him from really reaching a higher level of play, John. He has a really bad habit of escaping backwards out of the pocket. You can't do that in the NFL.
And I know that you do have some thoughts on what you're seeing out of Jamison Crowder, giving them some speed out of the slot, and also Derek Carrier, not a horrible option here. Talk about those two guys.
No. You know, Crowder gives them some juice, which they're totally lacking without DeSean. And Carrier, he's not Jordan Reed. Obviously, Reed is probably a top, you know, five or six guy athletically at the tight end position. Carrier's not that guy. But he's not a slow plodding tight end. He can make some catches at the intermediate levels. He can run the seam a little bit. You know, he's a good backup if you need play him.
Redskin run defense pretty respectable, or maybe even better than but I once again think that, you know, they're spread it out. It's kind of what they do here.
That's what I think they'll do, because as you and I discussed last night, you know, I think with the Redskins' secondary situation, I think that's a little difficult right now. And now that Chan Gailey has his full complement of wide receivers again, I see no reason why he won't go back and do what he's essentially been doing the large majority of the year, using more 3 and 4 wide receiver sets than pretty much any team in the NFL. He featured a lot of 4 wide receiver sets, and given the Redskins' situation, I don't see why he wouldn't do that.
D'Angelo Hall didn't practice on Wednesday. Chris Culliver and Breland were limited. So it does set up pretty well here for the Jets to have some success. And Ryan Fitzpatrick, he's been Mr. Fairly Steady, right? I mean, he's playing pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, you hate to say it. I hate to say it this way, that he's playing well for Ryan Fitzpatrick, but he's playing well. And, you know, obviously the only really bad game he had was against the Eagles when he threw the 3 picks. And other than that, he's been relatively consistent. But I still think they need to run the ball, John. And I think if they don't run the ball, and that's not a given against the Redskins defense, by the way. It's a very good run defense. They've got big bodies in the middle. I don't think the Jets' O-line is a dominant O-line. So that's a concern in this game, if they can run the ball and stay out of longer yardage situations.
Arizona at Pittsburgh, and we did talk about this off the air as well, and we'll see about Big Ben. I mean, it's a long shot, Greg. Slim chance that he's going to play. So it's once again going to be Michael Vick, most likely, at home against the Cardinals. And you know, again, I asked you about it earlier in the week. Like, I don't know what else there is to say about Michael Vick. I mean, when I talked on the podcast last week, you know, not to oversimplify it, but, you know, he's got a big arm. Just throw it up, basically. Just run some go routes, whatever, and utilize that big arm. They did finally do that, basically. It was a well-designed play, yes, but they took a shot and it worked. But Greg, well, otherwise, they were playing with Michael Vick like it was his first start in the NFL.
Yeah, I don't know what to say about that because I think he's at this point, you know, he still struggles, I think, to see things quickly and cleanly. So I think your pass offense against a really good defense, by the way, is a crapshoot. To me, the most fascinating matchup in this game is the other side of the ball, John, because a lot of people are not aware because the Steelers were viewed going into the season, oh, the terrible secondary, bad defense. But I don't know if you're aware, but number one, they're fourth in the NFL in sacks, and here's a stat that a lot of people look at because it deals with explosive plays. They've allowed the fewest passes of 20-plus yards in the NFL.
Wow.
And I don't think with their secondary, people would have viewed that as, you know, as something that would happen. So this team, you watch their defense, and yes, they don't have all pros in the secondary, but overall, the Steelers' defense on film looks very good.
Yeah, they do have players here. Bud Dupree seems to be doing well. You've got Shazier, Tuitt, Cameron Haywood.
I think Tuitt has played really well. I mean, he looks like he's going to be a player. You know, I had a defensive coordinator last year when Tuitt came out that I spoke to before the draft said that size-wise and stylistically, he reminded him of Reggie White. Now, he wasn't telling me he's Reggie White, you know, but you know, he's talking about the size and the movement and the way in which he potentially could play. And, you know, obviously he's not Reggie White right now, and no one ever may be Reggie White. That's not the point. But, you know, he's had a really good season so far.
But the one, if they have a deficiency, I guess you would still look at the secondary as
Well, you would think. Yeah. I mean, that's why this matchup is so great, because you got the Cardinals with Bruce Arians, who does some really, really good stuff in the pass game. And you have Palmer, who's playing at a really high level, stroking it better than any quarterback in the league right now, against this defense that doesn't give up a lot of big plays. And Arians lives off the explosive play. So it's a great, great matchup.
Yeah, it could be another Larry Fitzgerald day out of the slot against zone coverage, right? A lot of kind of a short dink and dunks. Yeah.
And Fitzgerald's been terrific against zone and not very good against man.
Yeah, and just to circle back, I mean, one of the points, start the Cardinal defense, because they'll throw a bunch of different looks at Vic, confuse him. Vic's probably getting sacked a bunch of times in this game, and you know, good luck if you have Antonio Brown. I'm sure it'll be Peterson, Greg. I mean, have you noticed Peterson?
Right.
It feels like Peterson's having a really good year this year, Greg. I don't know if you noticed that.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember the game that he really stood out to me, but there was a game. Oh, well, not he's a great receiver, but I remember watching him against Kenny Britt, and Kenny Britt was irrelevant in the game. He couldn't do anything against Peterson.
Yeah, I don't know if Peterson's given up a big play yet, because normally when he does, we all hear about it. But I don't think he has.
Yep.
Moving on. KC at Minnesota, and this is another one we were talking about. And I know you haven't seen much of Sharkhandrick West, so I won't put you on the spot
there. I have not. Yeah.
You know, the Viking D, you know, coming off the bye. You know, this pretty respectable unit, though, overall. I mean, this would you say that they're a top 12 defense?
Yeah. I mean, again, I know I just mentioned the numbers with the Steelers. I don't know the numbers offhand with the Vikings, but I think when you look at their talent and with Mike Zimmer there, I think they're a really solid. I don't think defense will be the reason if they're not a good team. That defense would be the reason.
Yeah, they're in the upper half against basically the run in the pass, and that's after, you know, a little bit of a debacle in week number one against the 49ers.
Right.
Seemingly were caught off guard here. So not an easy matchup for Alex Smith in Minnesota against Mike Zimmer's defense with Sharkhandrick West. And I guess we'll see if they can get Travis Kelce a little bit more involved. But I mean, generally speaking, going forward, I mean, I think you mentioned it about 2 weeks ago, you know, there was a game which Alex Smith was just dropping back left and right 40 plus times. Do you think they're going to have to play football a little bit more like that going forward without Jamaal Charles?
It's going to be a real tough balancing act for Andy Reid and staff, because I don't know if Alex Smith can do that effectively.
Yeah.
But I still think they're going to try to create some balance. Of course, they didn't in that game you mentioned, which was a close game. I forget who was that 2 weeks ago. That was actually was it Cincinnati? Yes, it was Cincinnati, which was a close game, and they pretty much abandoned the run, and that was with Jamaal Charles. So it's hard to say what they'll do going forward.
Yeah, and they're also limited. You know, you get past Kelsey and Macklin, I mean, what else do you have? I mean, we'll see about the Anthony Thomas. I mean, that's the guy I'm looking at.
Well, they're working in Chris Connolly, who is, you know, I think they would like him to be that number two because he's big and he can run.
And Minnesota, we were talking about, you know, I grew up a Vikings fan, so I'm a little dialed into them just subconsciously. And I don't feel like they have an identity. Greg, I don't know what their passing attack is. I have no idea. And is that your thought after watching the tape? Like you don't know what their identity is other than Peterson?
I think they're struggling with it to some degree, because I think that, you know, with Peterson, you want your offense to run through him. You'd like to be able to work off him in a pass game. But I think that Teddy Bridgewater has gone through a little bit of a second year. Slump's not the right word because he's not playing poorly, but I think they're trying to figure out exactly what his strengths and limitations are. He's not a big-time thrower. He's more of an efficient move-the-chains thrower. So I think they're trying to figure out with North Turner's offense, which at its core is much more of an intermediate passing game, and I still think they're trying to figure out if Bridgewater can run that portion of the offense effectively.
Yeah, and the Vikings receiver still banged up here. Wallace didn't practice early in the week. Uncertain. Charles Johnson was limited. Jarius Wright did go full. Did you break down Stephon Diggs' tape preparing for the draft?
Yeah. Yes. Go ahead. And I really liked Stephon Diggs, and I know someone who knows someone well who coaches in Maryland, and they said that, you know, he was a little bit of an issue, you know, personality wise, and that probably came through in probably draft meetings. I thought Stephon Diggs, and again, these are the comparisons, and people, you know, fall off their chairs. I thought he had the kind of route quickness where I said to myself, hey, if all works out for him and he becomes a good kid and a hard worker and all that, and there's 20 questions that need to be answered before you would get to that point, John. But yeah. I thought down the road he had a little Antonio Brown in him. Now,
very
that may
kid.
Never, ever happen.
Very yet. Athletic
but
kid, Greg. He's a former five-star recruit.
Yep.
Yeah, there you
and
go.
I think he might have been a track guy, too. He might have been a track guy. I can't remember.
Well, he did really well in the return game, much like Antonio Brown,
yep.
And early in his career, in the preseason. So there you go. Somebody asked me on the radio about him for fantasy this year. I don't know about that because I do think they like Jarius Wright in the slot. But keeper league, dynasty league, absolutely pick up Stephon Diggs, stash him away. And kid's very talented. And again, pretty good sign. He had first game. He was pressed into action. He had like five catches for 80 something yards. Moving on, Greg,
right.
Cincinnati at Buffalo. And again, the Bengals, we talked about them last week, how they were likely, I thought, you know, a challenging matchup for Seattle just because they have so many weapons and so many different ways to beat you. They're a hard offense to shut down. What are your thoughts here at first blush on this matchup with Andy Dalton playing well? Giovanni Bernard is kind of emerging as the guy because they're kind of spreading it out and throwing it all over the field. And he's okay in that type of offense as your lead back. And Jeremy Hill's not looked all that well. This matchup against Rex, I mean, who wins out? Multiplicity of the Bengal offense versus Rex and his D.
I think Jackson's going to be real aggressive formationally and play calling wise. I really do. I think that he's going to try to take it to Rex. You know, I think if Rex wants to blitz spread formations, I think Hugh Jackson's going to say, come on, you now have to cover all these guys. And I think that's what you're going to see. I think you're going to see a multi-dimensional spread offense by Cincinnati. And when I say this, I don't mean every play. I don't mean it's going to be a college game. But I think that will be the focus. I don't think he's going to tighten it up and hand the ball to Jeremy Hill. I think ultimately that Gio will play more, as he did last week in the second half. I think Hill might have played one or two snaps in the second half. He was really a non-factor. And, you know, that's what I see in this game.
And is that how you beat the Bills? I mean, you actually are aggressive in the passing game, short passing game at least?
Well, I think there's people believe that a general rule, when you play sophisticated blitzing teams, John, that if you spread them out, they have to declare blitz. And if you have a veteran quarterback playing well, as Dalton is right now, and Dalton's smarts and intelligence were never a question, I think he sees things well before the snap of the ball. I think if you have that kind of quarterback, I think the feeling is, hey, let them have to declare their blitz, and then we can beat the blitz because they can't cover all our guys. I mean, if they play Bernard, they've got five legitimate weapons. I mean, and a couple of them are big time. So this is a tough offense to match up to if you want a blitz.
Yeah, and Mohamed Sanu has been a factor lately, and I know you really like Marvin Jones, and of course AJ Green and Tyler Eifert, and there are your five along with Giovanni Bernard. For the Bills, it looks like it's going to be EJ Manuel. Is there a drop off of note to EJ Manuel? And look, I think Tyrod Taylor is clearly a better option, but it's a very basic offense. Taylor, I think, throws it better and he runs better. But overall, I mean, is it a huge drop off to EJ Manuel from Taylor?
Well, it is in terms of the running plays. I mean, and essentially, that's how they won the game last week. Yes, I think it's a drop-off in that regard because I don't think you have to stress defensively with EJ running the ball. If you're Paul Gunther for Cincinnati and it's Tyrod Taylor, you have to concern yourself with him running the football, both by design and spontaneously. I don't think that's a huge factor with EJ Manuel.
Bengals secondary, they've got good players. They have given up some plays here. I mean, Leon Hall and Adam Jones, Pac-Man Jones, are on the injury report. But, I mean, you like the front seven. And they still without Vontaze Perfect. They're still without Vontaze Perfect.
Correct.
Who's probably their best player.
Yeah, and I think the secondary is not really an issue. They've been playing the second-year player, Denard, quite a bit now, and I can remember plays where he was beaten in man coverage. So, I mean, they've given up some plays, but I don't think it's been a barrage. I mean, I don't think you look at their defense, John, or I don't on film anyway, and think, boy, the secondary is a weakness. I don't really see it that way on film, and they've been ahead in some games where the opponent has had to throw, which skews the numbers.
Moving on to the next game here, Greg, that would be Denver at Cleveland. And look, the Brown defense is not very good. They're probably not going to have Joe Hayden. We'll see about Tashaun Gibson. And that's a big loss there. They don't have a dominant pass rush.
Yep.
But in Denver, Greg, they can't run the ball. And it sure seems like that in large part is due to Peyton's inability to move. I mean, they can't really run the stretch plays and things like that and move him outside of the pocket, giving off handoffs and the like. And Peyton, you know, as you kind of, it's got to be a tough watch here with Peyton. I mean, I don't know what we have to say here. I mean, when you look at the tape and you look at the film, do you see a scenario in which things get better? With Peyton, you know he's going to put in the work. You know he's going to do everything he can to kind of perform at a higher level. But when you watch the tape, is your impression that, oh, things can get better here, running the ball and throwing the ball in Denver?
They're going to have to run the ball, John. They're not a very good offense. They're going to have to run. If they can't run the ball, they're going to struggle offensively all year. It's going to be a week-to-week proposition. So they need to run the ball. You know, the question you raise is the question they have to answer is, is their run game, is the Kubiak run game limited in the pistol? Because that's what they essentially run now, the pistol. So that's the question they have to answer. But this is a week-to-week offense. As I've said for a number of weeks, the discussion of Peyton is over. He's not the player he was. They're not a very good offense. That's the bottom line. If they can't run the ball, they're going to struggle.
Yeah, because we looked at it in the preseason, and you look at Kubiak's history. Always run the ball. I mean, they always have success, but we can't call this Kubiak's system running the ball right now, right? I mean, that's the issue. I mean,
no,
this shouldn't go on Kubiak's record if this continues all year. Oh, Kubiak's running game failed in 2015. No, this is not Kubiak's running game, right?
Well, they're running the ball. They're making an accommodation to Peyton.
Yeah.
So the question is, can they run the ball better versus, you know, out of this pistol as they continue? Or is it going to be a problem all year? If it's a problem all year, they're not going to have a very good offense, John.
Yeah, if it's a problem all year, then people are going to actually start talking Brock Osweiler here. I mean, I don't know if we're there yet, but let's see if – I mean, they are 5-0, though. I mean, that's the thing. I mean,
right.
You know, their defense is so darn good here, which turns to the matchup here for the Browns. And how impressed are you – and you talked about him last week. You pumped him up, Josh McCown. But how impressed are you at the – you know, I guess it's a product function of volume in a lot of ways, but, you know, the Browns actually have a respectable, legitimate offense. Of course, maybe not this week against Denver.
Denver's got, to me, on film, okay, and I'm the numbers I know are good too, but on film, I think they have the best defense in the league. So I think it's going to be a tough go, and I've loved Josh McCown the last 2 weeks. I actually thought he was better the week before, believe it or not, despite the numbers this week. But I think they're going to have a tough time. They can't run the ball, and I believe Crowell is injured. So their receivers, while they've done well, I think they're going to have a tough time in this particular matchup. So this, to me, as well as McCown has played in recent weeks, from a fantasy standpoint, I'm not sure this is the week to have McCown or that offense.
Yeah, if Travis Benjamin catches 5 balls for 90 yards, I'll just wave the white flag and say, I apologize, America. I did not give enough credit to Travis Benjamin because I'm
right,
really
right.
Buying it. Yeah, Crowell has a toe issue, so it could be Duke Johnson. And we love Duke, but he's not doing all that much running the football. Moving on, Greg, to Miami at Tennessee. It's obviously the Dolphins coming off the bye with their change, getting rid of Joe Philbin, Dan Campbell, former journeyman tight end, kind of an old school guy. It's a tough thing to analyze, obviously, because of this big change. But talk about what you're seeing on tape from the Titan defense. Are they getting better with Dick LeBeau there? I know you love Jarrell Casey. You know, where are we with the Titan defense?
You know, ultimately, John, I think where we are with the Titan D is an improving unit. I think that you're seeing more and more of the Dick LeBeau principles with each game. I think that you're seeing them make creative use of guys like Casey, Arakpo, Derek Morgan, just the kinds of things LeBeau used to do in Pittsburgh. So I think this is an improving unit. You know, not to the point where you're going to sit here and say it's a top 10 unit, but it's an improving unit.
How about Mariota last week on tape? I know you're fairly impressed mentally. He doesn't get beaten,
yep.
but physically, he seems to be a little off. Perhaps this past week missed some throws. What are you seeing out of Mariota on tape?
Yeah, I mean, he missed one throw in particular that would have been a touchdown, and when you lose 14-13, that throw really stands out. He played against a good defense. They don't have a lot of weapons. Their receivers struggle to win against man coverage, and they can't run the ball at all. So he's in a tough spot in many ways, and I think for the most part, he's handled himself very, very well. I think he's clearly trending up. You know, you look at a game like last week and people talk about it being his worst game, and he, you know, because the numbers weren't there, but if you watch the tape, while he certainly didn't play excellent, you didn't come away from that going, God, that was a really bad performance by a young quarterback. And there's no way at all you come away watching the tape feeling that way.
And then we thought a lot in the preseason, like, look, they draft a fullback before they take David Cobb out of Minnesota. Cobb's been on the shelf. But Greg, they can't run the ball. Obviously, Sankey, they don't like him at all. I mean, they're playing Dexter McCluster a lot as a lead back, which is shocking. The guy Antonio Andrews has been serviceable. He's going to get the ball a little bit. I look at David Cobb as when he's back, and Greg, that could be in a couple of weeks. Now, David Cobb, they should give him every opportunity to be the lead back here, don't you think?
Well, I think they're going to, because it's clear they're searching, John. I mean, when you line up McCluster in the I formation as your I back and give him the ball, and he's taking snaps away from Bishop Sankey, then you know you're searching.
Yeah, and David Cobb would be by far their best runner. I mean, just based on what I saw in the
Well, he's a rookie. We don't know that, but I liked him coming out, but he's a rookie, so we don't know that yet.
Yeah, we also don't know what the hell to expect from the Miami Dolphins. So, I mean, I guess we'll see. I got to think they do whatever it takes to try and run the ball and take some pressure off of Tannehill. I mean, as a general statement, that's a lot on Tannehill's plate. And maybe he's not reacting all that well, but there's just been way too much on this guy's plate thus far with some tougher matchups this year in Miami.
Well, the thing we don't know about Miami's offense, and we talked about this last night, is with Dan Campbell there now, and he's old school, you know, he's wants to be physical, wants to be tough. They had essentially run a version of the Chip Kelly offense, which is not based on physicality and toughness. So does Dan Campbell change this, or does he feel like, hey, I can't make that kind of change in a season, we're still going to play the same way? I don't think any of us know the answer to that question.
Well, I'm hoping that it's the latter, and he says, we're not going to change it, but we do want to run the ball. And Lamar Miller, I know he hasn't run it well this year, but I'm not sure about the commitment to him. And he did average over 5 yards a carry in this offense, spreading it out. You know, three receivers on the field,
right,
and spread it out, create some rushing lanes.
Well,
take some pressure.
We'll see.
Yeah.
That's theoretically the way they were playing, and they couldn't run the ball.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm going to look back real quick at the number of attempts, though. I mean, it's so difficult. You know, it's a fine line. Oh, I can't run the ball, so we're not going to run it. And then on the other hand, you got, well, you can't run the ball because you're not committing to it. You know, here's the carries, Greg.
Well,
13, 10,
yeah.
7, 7.
Yeah, no, it's a very fine line. And then, you know, he may be the kind of coach that says, hey, the run game is a four-quarter deal, so even if we can't run it well in the first quarter, we're not abandoning it. There's coaches who won't call running plays if they're not working. Maybe Dan Campbell's not that guy. You know, that's what we have to find out.
And I would also say this. Week one at Washington, that's a good run defense. Week two at Jacksonville, Greg, that's a good run defense. They're pretty good against the run, the Jags.
Right.
And then week three, Buffalo, we know that's a good one. Week four, New York Jets. So, I mean, I think they've faced four of the top 10 run defenses in football this year thus far. And
right.
two of the top five at least. So, I mean, we'll see. I'm fairly optimistic that Lamar Miller will actually do something, and that'll really have a good effect on the offense overall. Moving on, Greg, to – oh, man, this one here. Speaking of the Jags, Houston at Jacksonville. I don't really have all that much. We'll see about T.J. Yeldon.
Well,
he's banged up.
Then maybe we can move on, John. I mean, there's not a lot to say about it. We know Hoyer's going. Apparently, Bortles will go, you know, based, again,
yeah.
I think we need
he
to
practiced.
Find out what happens today in practice. Yeah. Yeah, but I mean,
Wednesday.
We saw what happened last year with his arm. It got tired, and he started to lose his mechanics, you know, that's a concern right now.
Yeah, and I've got literature on the mind when I look at the Texans, because I keep thinking when I watch them play, Romeo, Romeo, wherefore art thou defense, Romeo? I mean, because they're just not doing a damn thing defensively, Greg, in Houston. I mean, how surprised are you? I mean, they're literally just there. I mean, they got six sacks in five games, two interceptions, no fumble recoveries. You know, in the fantasy world, they're literally the worst defense, Greg. I mean, how shocking is this?
It's really shocking. I mean, I'm surprised. Now, again, we can start going through, which we won't, their personnel. I think their personnel, to me, is better, in all honesty, than they're playing. I don't get into, you know, ripping coaches. I don't do that. But clearly it's a defense that is not playing to what I believe to be the level of their personnel.
Yeah. And I know we've talked about Jacksonville's defense, that they're pretty disciplined and solid, you know, just not a ton of talent here. Could see some points being scored in this one, though, with Hoyer getting the ball to DeAndre Hopkins. And it looks like Cecil Shorts may play as well. Moving on to the next one here, and that is Carolina at Seattle. And these teams know each
good
other
one.
Well, Greg. Yeah, it's a great one. That's a D
they've
in the
played every
game.
Year, John, since yeah, I couldn't agree more. They've played every year since 2012, and last year they played twice. And with the exception of last year's divisional playoff game, which Seattle won, Seattle's not put up more than, I think, 16 or 17 points in any of those other four games, or three games, I should say. So I would expect this to be one of those hard fought. This is not a good fantasy game offensively, in my view.
Yeah, this is a 12-9 game. This is a Steven Hauschka, Graham Gano game. Panthers play a lot of zone. Go ahead.
This is like last week or the week before. I forget which week in college football where I think Wake Forest beat Boston College 3-0.
Oh, my God. Wow. That happened? I missed that one.
It did. Yeah, it did.
But the Panthers, they play a lot of zone, and maybe that explains why Russell Wilson has not run all that well and put up numbers.
No, he hasn't.
Against his defense.
No, because if you play zone, which is what they predominantly play anyway in Carolina, you always have eyes looking back into the backfield. So you can't take off with no one seeing the quarterback. So, that's the way they play. I think the key is whether Carolina, on the other side of the ball, they have the most diverse, multidimensional option run game in the league. And I think they need to be able to run the ball to some degree. They don't have to rush for 180, John, but I think they need to sustain offense with the run game to some degree.
And I was able to spend some time with Greg Olsen at DirecTV last week on his bye week. He sat on the set there for a couple of hours, and he fully recognizes how difficult this matchup is. He knows it very well. However, while I'm talking to him, Cam Chancellor was being targeted in the passing game by the Bengals, and Tyler Eifert kind of lit him up here. I mean, what do you think? I mean, they have to try to do the same thing, right, with Greg Olsen, take their shots, because that's all they got in the passing attack.
Well, the two Eifert touchdowns were zone concepts in which Chancellor did not play his zone responsibility properly. The big play on the final drive was man coverage, of which Chancellor was playing Eifert and actually had very good coverage. It was an unbelievable throw and catch. But I think that Chancellor will have snaps in which he plays Olsen man-to-man, for sure. And I think that that's something that the Panthers probably feel like, hey, we have Greg Olsen. We're going to throw it to him in those situations.
Yeah, I'm sure they're going to be gearing up for it, though. I hate to say it, but I'd have to lean to Olsen, not coming through here. But, for those who have him like me in a couple of leagues, you just hope for the best because he's Greg Olsen. And look, he even admitted to me that, I said, look, here's my takeaway. You may be up and down here because you're kind of a marked man. And he's like, yeah, pretty much. Yeah, that's pretty much. Any thoughts on Thomas Rawls? He looked a little bit like Marshawn Lynch breaking some tackles on some runs here. What's your takeaway from Rawls on the tape?
Yeah, he runs downhill with purpose and with some natural power. I think he's a little reckless. I don't think at this point he has great vision, but he runs hard and he has a strong lower body. But Marshawn, I read this morning, is clear to go. He's going to go.
Yeah. San Diego at Green Bay. And I kind of like Eddie Lacy in this one. I don't know if you have a ton of thoughts, but, they have not run it. It's been a little curious. Aaron Rodgers did throw a couple of picks last week, so maybe you balance it out here and get some more production out of your ground attack. But what do you see with this matchup for the San Diego Chargers? I mean, this defense they continue to just kind of be right. They're average. They don't really have a dominant pass rush. I do think their secondary is decent, but I do think that they're vulnerable against the run here. Any thoughts, takeaways on the Charger D?
I think that this will be a good week for the Packers offense. I really do. I think they'll run it. I think they'll throw it. To me, the best fantasy play, if you want to look at it that way, in this game, I look at the Green Bay defense that no one really talks about. I mean, they're really good against the pass. Dom Capers has really gone back to sort of his old school roots. He's really multi-dimensional with his use of personnel and schemes. They're second in the NFL in sacks. I don't know how many people realize that. And with the Chargers O-line being a bit of a mess, I think that side of the ball and the Packers defense is really the most interesting play this week.
Yeah, they got 20 sacks, second only to Denver at 21.
That's second in the league, yep.
Yep, and the defense stepped up. The offense didn't have the best day, and the defense stepped up. So that's a sign of a championship team, and they're looking good there. And let's talk real quick about Melvin Gordon, because Green Bay has been run on at times. They do go light with a lot of DBs on the field, and sometimes you can run on them. But Now, Melvin Gordon, there's a lot of our concerns that we expressed in the preseason. He's just not been impressive. He doesn't seem to create much space, from him and the defenders. There's always seemingly someone right on top of him. He doesn't seem to be running, physically and doing well in that regard. So now we're left with what is he? I mean, what is your takeaway of watching Melvin Gordon?
Well, it's the sample size is too small to make a definitive judgment about his career.
Sure.
But I think some of the concerns I had coming out of Wisconsin have shown up. I don't think he has great vision, and I think that's a concern. I think he's a little straight line in the way he runs. He's not a natural shifty back, which plays to your point about creating space. And I think a number of times we've seen him try to bounce, and in college he would get the corner and run 60 yards for a touchdown. In the NFL, he gets tackled. So I think he has to improve his vision, and he has to improve his ability to run inside, which was the concern coming out.
Yeah, it sure seems like this offense is going to have to be keyed by Phillip Rivers all season. They drafted Gordon in the first round.
Which is hard with those offensive line issues, John. That's the issue. I mean, it's hard.
Yeah. I mean, it could mean Danny Woodhead catches 85 balls. That's kind of what I'm looking at.
It absolutely could. Yep.
Yeah, that's what I'm kind of looking at here. Now, they did get Gordon involved in the passing attack last week. We give him some credit for that. I mean, they got to get something out of the kid, and he's not worthless in the passing attack. But that's usually Danny Woodhead territory. Baltimore at San Francisco. And basically, we're shocked a little bit. I was that Kaepernick played relatively well, made some throws here. But, you watched the tape. And it was basically very well-defined, one read, get it out kind of stuff there. Is that what you saw at a Kaepernick
that's
last
fair.
Week? Yeah.
That's fair, and I think that's the right thing to do to try to get him back. They're playing against a pretty bad defense through the early part of the season, Baltimore. Their pass defense has not been very good, as you know. So theoretically, you look at this game and hopefully this is another stepping stone for Kaepernick to be able to make some defined throws, throw the ball accurately, throw the ball well, as he predominantly did last week. And that's the key. And hopefully that they can get Gore, got to listen to me, get Hyde, running again like they did last week. And Hyde got a lot of ability. He's a big back with light feet.
I really like him a lot. I think we were talking about it earlier. I actually think he's a little bit more physically talented than, let's say, Eddie Lacy. I mean, Lacy's a bigger man, more powerful, but I love lateral ability of a Hyde in the feet. And he's like I said, he's a big dude. And this matchup is beatable, but how sustainable is it? I would say it's unsustainable, Greg. It reminds me of when a quarterback makes his first start, like last year, Ryan Mallett made that one start, you know what? He's not bad. But then the sample size grows and you can't do that every week.
Well, yes, you're right. It's not sustainable, but it had to be the starting point, because in the previous two games, he'd really gotten almost to rock bottom where you had to start over, John. So, playing this way is not sustainable over time, but it's a necessary step to get to the next step. So hopefully it keeps going in that direction.
We got you, Greg?
I'm here, John.
I think this happened last time. We did not have Greg for a moment there, and then we got him back.
I'm here.
Okay, there you go. Let's move on to I want to get your thoughts on Justin Forsett is dealing with that ankle. He didn't go practice on Wednesday. Hopefully it's not a big deal. He does some work on Thursday. But your thoughts on Buck Allen, Lorenzo Taliaferro will be on IR. So it'll have to be Javorius Buck Allen if Forsett can't go. And they've run the ball well the last couple of weeks. Buck Allen, though, be a sustainer?
And I struggle with him, and I struggled with him coming out of USC. Not in a negative way. I couldn't decide whether I thought he was a complimentary type back in the NFL or whether he could ultimately be a more of a foundation back. And even watching him in the NFL, I still struggle. I think that if he has to play for two or three games, you're fine. And that's all we're talking about. If he has to go this week, can he carry the ball 22 times for 120? Sure, he can. So if he has to go, you know, he's a big guy. I mean, he's about 6 feet, 225, so he's a big man. So I think if their run game will be exactly the same if he goes.
The 49er D, any thoughts? I know you've studied them recently. I mean, they're respectable. It's not a shutdown group, but what are your thoughts on their D?
I think their secondary is a concern, but the big question is, can the Ravens exploit that, because they're not really very good at the receiver position. I think they're somewhat limited what they can do in the pass game. So I think they have an exploitable secondary, but this might not be the matchup for that to take place.
Yeah, and you're watching the Ravens tape, and it's, you know, I was reading some stuff, and it reminded me of like 2009 when, you know, the guys just aren't getting open on the outside, right?
Yeah, I mean, and I think that the pass game concepts recognize that, and they know they can't do certain things.
New England at Indy, and we try and figure this out, and we're usually wrong, but, you know, I kind of think of this as a Gronk game. You know, you got the revenge factor and all that, but they've also run the ball down the Colts' throat. So, you know, basically, New England, I just feel like they're going to do whatever they want in this matchup. I mean, is that taking it too far?
Well, you know, I'm always leery of saying that about an offense, but the problem in fantasy for this game is, if you look at recent history, you think they're going to run the ball. If you look at what they could do matchup-wise, you think, hey, Gronk could have a big game, you know, Edelman could have a big game, so it's hard to get a feel for this from a fantasy standpoint, just because they've had such great success running the ball the last, I think, two times they've played.
But I look at it this way, and I remember starting this a couple of years ago. Oh, this is a Gronk-Edelman game. Well, every game is a Gronk and Edelman game. I mean, that's the
correct
bottom line.
That's correct.
At least until they get Brandon LaFell back. But and then on the other side, look, they're going to try and take out T.Y., as they always do. And if they're successful, Greg, who do you think can step up and make some plays? I think the matchup is beatable. I do think that Andrew Luck will play, and I think he'll have to throw it a lot. I'm personally looking at Kobe Fleener as a guy who can potentially step up and surprise, but maybe it's Andre Johnson. I mean, they still do have Moncrief and Philip Dorsett.
I think Moncrief is a guy that increasingly for them is going to have to become a factor. And he's been somewhat of a factor up to this point, John. But I think because of his size and his speed, he can win versus man. You know, he has the strength to win versus man, make contested catches. The Patriots have played a lot more man than I thought they would play with their secondary. So I think that Moncrief is a guy who's going to have to become a factor week to week.
And the Colts did sign Ahmad Bradshaw, so they.
I saw that.
I don't know what he has left in a tank, but that guy gets it done, man. He's amazingly productive. We love Frank Gore, but Bradshaw's more productive. I mean, that's the bottom line. So we'll see. And I think I think it's more of a function of Josh Robinson and Tyler Vargo. I mean, they didn't have much behind Gore, but I don't even know if Bradshaw's going to suit up.
No, I think It's interesting why they signed him, and my guess is they signed him because Robinson has really struggled in pass protection, and that's been causing a huge problem.
Oh, yeah, and I think that Bradshaw is a good hurry-up back. Hell, he could catch five balls in the fourth quarter this week if they're playing from behind against New England. Yeah, I mean, it's unbelievable. And finally, Greg, the Giants at the Eagles, you're watching the tape there. You know, from my perspective, I didn't see every play, obviously, but I thought that the O-line gave Bradford some space. He looked more comfortable, stepped up into the pocket. Still a little off on his throws here, but they're scratching and clawing their way to respectability. What did you see out of the Eagle offense?
You know, it was a positive. I wouldn't say that they were great. I thought Bradford was still uneven, but he was better. They clearly got their run game going. Against a not a very good defense, not a very fast defense, a defense that at times struggled to get lined up, which of course is what the Eagles try to get you to do with their tempo. So I thought that the O-line clearly had its best game. Jason Kelce clearly played his best game. Selleck did an excellent job blocking on the edge, which he had not done well through the first four games. So it was a better performance overall, but I still don't think it's anywhere near where they want it to be.
And the Giant defense.
Amukamara is out this week, by the way. Amukamara is out.
Yeah, so he's out. He had that pec injury, and now you're left with it. Look, Spagnuolo has conceivably done a great job here, but no pass rush, no Amukamara. I mean, this is a very beatable matchup here for Philly to continue to ascend offensively.
No question. I couldn't agree more. I mean, this is a game where they theoretically should continue to improve. So that I would look for. Now, it's all a function of, Bradford, as I said, he has to play better. And if he doesn't, you know how it is with quarterbacks, John. They could be playing the worst defense in the league, and if they're not seeing it and they're not comfortable, they're still going to play poorly. And, Bradford needs to continue to improve.
With Jordan Matthews struggling a little bit, he's dropping some balls. Should fantasy owners look at the Eagles and say, no thanks? I mean, because they just don't have a go-to guy, and it's a bunch of players now involved: Celek and Ertz and Huff and Cooper and Austin. I mean, there's no go-to guy here. Not even close. I thought Jordan Matthews would be one by. With volume and all that, getting a lot of looks every week, but I'm not sure about him at this point. I mean, this is kind of a pain in the butt for fantasy.
Yeah, I think the offense isn't built on a go-to guy. I know that if it's running really effectively, someone like Matthews would catch a lot of balls, which would be wonderful for fantasy, but he still wouldn't be a go-to guy in the way you're talking about a go-to guy. It's just that if this offense runs the way Chip wants it to run, they're going to run 80 to 85 plays a game, and Bradford's going to complete, 27, 28 balls a game, and a lot of guys are going to catch balls, and maybe Matthews gets 7 a game, in which case the numbers are great. But this offense is not built around a go-to guy. And because it's struggling, now Matthews is not getting as many targets, and he's unfortunately had some drops, which makes it worse.
Right. So a guy can put up numbers that a go-to guy would normally put up, but he needs the snap count up high, and it was high last week, but it hasn't
Correct.
Been high this year.
Correct. So, yeah. I mean, Jordan Matthews is not used the way, Dez Bryant is when he plays for the Cowboys. They're not designing plays for Jordan Matthews per se. He's within the scheme, and the scheme will get him open when it's and when the quarterback's playing well.
And on the other side, what are your thoughts on Shane Vereen? Because I was baffled a week ago, really this time last week, that he didn't get more looks. He had zero targets, and all of a sudden he kind of exploded. I mean, I look at Shane Vereen as a guy, you got to find a way to get this guy involved every week on a consistent basis. They can't run the ball, Greg, and they have some guys stepping up here, but, with Beckham and Randall out, it's a little thin right now. They're working out some players. But, through it all, Eli's still playing well. And, when they're clicking on all cylinders, I almost view this like New England's, like it's almost indefensible. I mean, the ball comes out so quickly. How do you stop
it? Yeah, it does. They won't run the ball this week. The Eagles have a terrific front seven in the run game. Really good. One of the best in the league. Vereen was a big factor last week, certainly on the final drive. When you have Vereen and Donnell in the game at the same time, it's tough. You have to decide. The Eagles like to play both nickel and dime, depending on the situation. It presents potentially in nickel a tough matchup for them because they like to play man as well. So I would expect weeks ago, and then it seemed like there was a lull in the action. But I really think Vereen, given that they can't run the ball real well, John, Vereen needs to be a significant part of what they do.
That's going to wrap it up, Greg. We thank you for your efforts and your insight as always, sir. And we'll talk with Mr. Greg Cosell next week. Enjoy week 6, Greg. And we're going to sign it off here. And before we do, we want to remind you that this podcast today, here on Thursday, October 15th, was brought to you by Sports Manias, your free fantasy news app. You can now get all the news on your fantasy players in one place. Download the free Sports Manias app, import your fantasy team, get personalized player feeds, dominate your league. Sports Manias, get your fantasy on. That's going to wrap it up. I'm John Hansen. Obviously, all the subscribers, check out the DFS Guru on the website this week and all of our content. We're cranking it out here. Kevin Adams with all his DFS stuff, the Sunday content, and all. Looks like we've got the site squared away after a week 2 glitch. So we're rocking and rolling here at fantasyguru.com. That's going to wrap it up, and good luck. in week number 6. We'll talk to you next week.